on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, visiting today with 94-year-old Russell Winsett of Bonita Springs, Florida. On December 7th, 1941, he was aboard the USS Pennsylvania, which was in dry dock at Pearl Harbor. We heard him remember ascending to his duty station, a 50-caliber machine gun nest on the foremast of that battleship, and how he fired away at Japanese planes going by. The Pennsylvania was one of the first ships to return fire at the Japanese that day, and Mr. Winsett knows some of the rounds he fired connected with enemy aircraft. 24 men aboard the Pennsylvania were killed that day, many more wounded, and Mr. Winsett knows he easily could have added to that number. We're thankful he did not, and thankful he can share his story with us on Hometown Heroes. If you go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, you'll find photos of Mr. Winsett and also of his ship in the aftermath of the attack. That might help you understand all of this even better. Before we're done, we're going to hear briefly from his son, Ron, who was in the room throughout this interview with his dad. But right now, before we dive back into Mr. Winsett's World War II memories, let's listen to some of what you would have heard if you were listening to the radio on December 8th, 1941, when President Franklin D. Roosevelt addressed the nation about what had happened the day before at Pearl Harbor.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The attack yesterday on the Hawaiian Islands has caused severe damage to American naval and military forces. I regret to tell you that very many American lives have been lost. No matter how long it may take us to overcome this premeditated invasion, the American people in their righteous might will win through to absolute victory.
So that was FDR on December 8th, 1941, rallying a nation that had been attacked. Let's get back to one of the men who experienced that attack firsthand, Russell Winsett. You told us about the events of December 7th as you saw them that day. But what happened next for you?
After I got off that Pennsylvania, I got on another ship and went to the Pacific. Of course, this is getting away from Pearl Harbor now, but that ship got blown in half, and I survived that.
What ship was that?
USS Foote.
The USS Foote. What kind of ship is that?
The destroyer.
So you went from a battleship to a tin can.
Right.
And how'd you feel about that? Because, I mean, you're on a battleship and you get hit at Pearl Harbor. Now you're going even to a more vulnerable ship.
Well, actually, it's a lot better because you got acquainted with more people.
All right.
And a battleship was so big that you just couldn't get didn't know all of everybody on there. A destroyer was more family-like, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what were your duties on the destroyer?
Same as the battleship, gunnery.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I was second or third class. But cleaning the guns and taking care of them.
Where did you guys go, and what kind of action did you encounter? Because I imagine you were pretty hungry to find those Japanese.
Yeah. Where we got hit was, and this destroyer was in a battle out at sea. We had bombarded a few islands and coming back south, and we got word that there's an enemy task force heading south. So we made a U-turn and went back to meet up with them. And we went in for a torpedo run, and that's when we got hit. They towed us back to the dry dock, and they put a false stern on and towed us to the States. Then I got on another one. I went all the way up, and I was in Iwo Jima. Saw the flag raising there.
Hold up, because I want to hear about this incident where you guys got hit. Because you just say that, we got hit. I think before you said we got blown in half. You're saying that real matter-of-factly, but I'm sure that wasn't a no-big-deal situation when it happened.
Oh, no.
Where were you and how did you experience that?
Well, believe it or not, I didn't have a particular battle station on that destroyer. I was like any gun had a problem, they'd call and I would go there.
All
so
right.
I was back and forth, and believe it or not, I had just been down below decks before he got hit, just coming up the ladder when we got hit, and I lost the whole gun crew down there, and I just made it myself.
So you say you lost a whole gun crew, and some people might be wondering, well, how many men is that? What does a gun crew consist of?
Actually, it wasn't the gun crew. It was the magazines where the ammunition was stored. That was four or five guys that are loading the ammunition into the hoist to go up to the guns.
And you were coming up the ladder. How close to that?
10 or 15 feet. I could feel the blast myself.
Yeah. That gets your attention, huh?
You better believe it.
So what do you do from there?
Well, I went topside and got over where it was clear. And I forget if the executive officer, Captain One, ordered to abandon ship. And I got ready to go overboard with the crew, you know. And before anybody had jumped in the water, they belayed the action. So we stayed aboard. A good thing we did, because what they did to compensate for the half of the ship being blown off the back, they flooded all the forward compartments. So everybody on the ship lost everything they had from water and what have you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we went up forward and got the ship balanced up. And, of course, we were close to land anyway in the channel there. And they sent a destroyer out to tow us to the beach. Then a tugboat come and got us and towed us back down to Espirito Santos. They put us in dry dock there and put a false stern on. Well, actually, all they did is just take it. They had a torches, just cut it, make it even, and put big sheets of metal up there and welded. And then they flooded the dry dock to see if it would float, you know, and everything was on, no leaks. So it was a merchant ship, I think, towed us back to the States. And I got off of that one, and I got another one.
Well, I'm just thinking, what if I were in your shoes? What would I be feeling? What would I be thinking? The first ship I'm on gets hit by the Japanese at Pearl Harbor, quite a few casualties there. Then you get onto this destroyer, and they hit you again,
yeah.
Almost sink the ship. You almost had to abandon ship. You're a few feet away from a blast that easily could have killed you. I'd be starting to wonder if I was going to survive this war. Did you ever feel that way?
Well, I said somebody was looking over my shoulder.
And some people say, well, that's a cliche, but I hear you say that, and I don't think you say that lightly.
I tell you, I guess you heard the old saying, a cat had 9 lives. I think I had 10.
That means there must have been some more close calls out there for you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Give us a taste of another one.
Well, we went into, well, that's the only time my ship ever got hit.
Yeah.
But, like I say, we was in Iwo Jima, Okinawa, and then went in the invasion of Japan. And
what ship were you on for that?
It was the USS Auburn, which was a communication ship.
Boy, that's an awfully, awfully bad name for a ship if you're a Crimson Tide fan like you.
Yeah.
I know Bear Bryant hadn't hit Alabama yet, but was that as big a deal back then, the Auburn-Alabama rivalry?
No. Nobody even heard of that place.
Good thing that was the case, because if you'd been assigned today, you might have said, no, I need another ship. Huh?
That's right.
So you mentioned something there. You mentioned Iwo Jima. And, of course, just like Pearl Harbor, where your war experience started, that is one of those names that the second you hear it, the image people think of is that flag going up atop Mount Suribachi. Did you see that flag flying up there?
I sure did. We had taken troops in, because we could take about 600 troops. And we lay off offshore, as close as we could get, and let those guys go in. And I'm up on the forecastle of the ship and looking. I didn't even need binoculars to see, because you didn't know who they were, but with Army, Navy, Marines, or who, but they got the flag, and they had to bring it down and put up another one. I don't know what was wrong. I never did get the history of that. But raised the flag twice. They brought wounded aboard, and they had I'm up on a quarter deck, and the boat pulled alongside. It had a body in it, and looked, and here it was a Japanese they brought aboard. He'd been wounded. And they got him, I guess, to try to get information. Laying alongside him in the stretcher was this M1 Garand rifle. I said, man, that's American rifle. Here he had probably killed some guy and took his gun. Well, I got that and put it down in the armory and left it there.
Was that hard to see the soldiers that were brought aboard that were wounded?
Well, it hurt, but, you know, you got used to it after a while.
Well, you started to tell me that story about taking the rifle from the wounded Japanese soldier who was brought aboard your ship. And you said you put it down in the armory, and I was wondering if you were able to hold on to that thing.
Oh, yeah. But that ship, when we left the Pacific, we came through the canal and pulled into Philadelphia. Well, those Marines at the gate, boy, they searched everybody for everything. So I knew it was going to be tough getting it off ship. So I broke it down and took piece by piece off and got away with it. Then I got everything home. I put it back together, and he still has it today.
Still in the family.
Yep.
And this was an M1 that was probably used by a Marine on Iwo Jima, probably a Marine who got killed.
Right.
That's some significant history.
Never knew who it belonged to, who it was issued to.
You mentioned the fact that there were two flags, and the story goes that the first flag went up, and the ranking naval officer looked up, saw that flag, wanted it for himself, and said, we need to send a bigger flag up there. So he sent another patrol with a bigger flag, and it's that second bigger flag that is in all the famous photographs, the Joe Rosenthal photo, and, of course, the statue in Washington, D.C. at the Marine Corps Memorial. But for you at the time when you looked up, and you said you didn't know who put it there, but you knew what it was. You saw the red, white, and blue. You knew this was the American flag. What did that mean to you to see it on that high ground of Mount Suribachi?
I knew it. We had captured that island. It wouldn't be the more Japanese up there to fire at us, you know. We get close enough in, they could fire on us from the beach. That was pretty damn close for a ship.
Mm-hmm. Was it hard to be gone that long, not knowing how long this war is going to last?
Oh, God, yeah. Not knowing what happened back home or anything. Because out there you didn't get mail every day.
How often did you hear from home?
Oh, about every week, I guess. When we get someplace, the mail catch up to us and we get a letter from my father. In fact, in my room there I have a letter that I wrote to my family before the war. And they saved it. Then when they passed away, my oldest brother, his wife, kept it. He finally got back to me, and I said, man, look at that scribbling.
Takes you back a ways, huh?
Yes, it does.
So you were in from the beginning of the war to the end of the war.
I was in from August of 1940 to August of 1960.
Yeah, 20-year Navy career. And as far as World War II, you already mentioned that. You know, you went into Japan at the end of things. So you're there at Pearl Harbor. Your ship, the Foote, gets hit. You see Iwo Jima. You're there at Okinawa. You go into Japan after the surrender. Throughout all that time, was there a moment, an incident, an experience that for you, when you think back on it now, you say, boy, that was the worst, or that's where I came the closest to not being here, to my kids and grandkids and great-grandkids not being born?
That's right. Yeah, I often think of that. But I guess the good Lord is looking out for me.
I guess so. What was the scariest or most frightening, most harrowing moment you think of all of that for you?
I guess Pearl Harbor is the worst. Because, see, most of these other battles, we would just bombard. And some of them would fire back and some didn't, but that was the easy part. But you often wonder what the hell happens when you run out of ammunition. And that came across my mind several times out there. But luckily, we never did.
I imagine if you spent that much time at sea, from the start of the war to the end of the war, on one side of the Panama Canal and the other and all over the world, you probably had to encounter some pretty ridiculous weather a time
or
two.
Oh, God, yeah. Typhoons. Oh, there's a hell to ride on a small ship.
Yeah, I had one vet one time describe that to me as feeling like a flea on an elephant.
That's a good description.
Well, can you describe for us what that was like? I mean, what to be on a small ship in a typhoon, what that meant for you guys, and how crazy that was?
Well, he always figured, the old man, the skipper, he knew what he was doing, and he knew how to ride them things out. And I was never scared during a hurricane or typhoon, but he got some nasty ones out there.
How bad? I mean, if you were on the deck of that ship, what would you see?
Well, you see waves as high as a ship. And, boy, that was scary.
Mm-hmm. And if you were below deck, what did you have to do to avoid getting thrown from one side to the other?
You just hold on to whatever's there.
It almost seems like that might be scarier than some of the combat situations.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
It's time for a break again. There was quite a bit that Russell Winsett survived in World War II. His three sons, seven grandkids, and seven great-grandkids sure are thankful for that. If you want to see what this 94-year-old Pearl Harbor survivor looks like, head over to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And keep it right here, because Hometown Heroes will come down the home stretch right after this.